Good morning, Steve Dale on WGN Radio. I promise you this conversation will be interesting, maybe controversial, with the founder and the CEO of the Animal Policy Group, an attorney who is involved in so many things when it comes to veterinary medicine. So there I am at an event. I turn around, and almost always, Mark Cushing is there. And have you've been involved with the animal world, Mark, for a very long time. I will tell you, you are responsible for the fact that I am sleep-deprived because I went to read your book at, like, I don't know, 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, and it wasn't until 2:30 in the morning that I fell asleep. So thank you for that in a way, but this book is a great read. You're an attorney, and what you do is you set up the argument explaining how America over the decades has changed. We have become, as the book is called, Pet Nation, the love affair that changed America. So for a bit, I want to talk about that love affair, but then I want to cut to the chase of what I believe your book is really about. So let's talk about that love affair. So since you, I don't need to know your age, but since you were born, for example, however many decades ago that was, compared to today, our viewpoints of companion animals, mostly dogs and cats, has changed dramatically, hasn't it?
Yeah, radically would probably not be too strong a word. And really, from my childhood to where we are today, Steve, pets were accessories. They were around. Cats came and went. To some extent, dogs came and went from house to house to where we are today with an entirely new relationship with cats and dogs in particular. You know, they're in the house, they sleep in the bed, and the dogs ran right out the front door to every corner of America. And they did it across the country, Manhattan, small towns in Montana, suburbs of Chicago. You can't go anywhere today, I challenge all your listeners, and you'll see a dog. There's no place you can go that you won't see a dog except inside of a kitchen of a restaurant, and they shouldn't be in there. But it's as if all the dogs not allowed signs were removed in our culture, and hotels being the best example, pets are welcome. It's a recognition that people want to be with their pets, and workplaces, restaurants, others that don't accommodate that will pay a price. And there's a lot more to the book, but that's a central thesis.
And that thesis is that dogs and cats in particular have become members of the family. You know, millennials refer to dogs and cats as their fur babies. That's really kind of what they are, aren't they?
Yes, and I don't use the term pets or the new kids because that's maybe disrespectful to pets. I think they've got a better deal than most kids do. So, and I have four millennial kids and one Generation Z. But no, they're in the family. They're central, and they don't go away to college. You know, they're there. What's remarkable to me, Steve, and you know this so well, is that it's accidental, but we have almost the same number of pet cats and pet dogs in America. And I still haven't figured that one out. I thought I might figure that out in writing the book, and I could not come up with the answer that explained how close the numbers of each are, given the different relationship we have with cats and dogs. But that's just one interesting part of the story.
But still, there are more cats, and we could talk about why that's so. But here's what I do want to talk about. So you write about this so eloquently in the book about how our culture has changed, how life is so much better for most dogs, not all, but most dogs today compared to 30 or 40 years ago, for example, and certainly far more than, say, 100 years ago. However, what we ultimately get to is this, and this is the nuts and bolts part of the book that I really want to talk about. You look into a crystal ball, and based on the data, based on this argument that as a great attorney you set up along the way, saying we are actually going to have a shortage of dogs and cats. We are beginning to experience that right now, actually, and you're right about that. And then you ask this question, where are we going to get the dogs and cats from when potentially demand exceeds supply? And one of those places, and I want to dive into it here, And, you know, I remind you, you're talking to the guy who in Chicago and nationally even has supported the notion that dogs or cats, probably not rabbits, should be sold at pet stores because of where they're sourced from. And you write about that as well. And I don't know that we completely agree about it, but I want you to comment about what you wrote about this.
Happy to. And you know me, Steve. If I disagree, I'd do it with a smile on my face. But here's my view. We have a shortage. I first learned of it from two senior executives of two of the largest animal welfare and animal rights groups in the country 7 years ago who privately conceded that to me. I then dove in, helped fund the research that came back and said it's true. So Where do we get dogs from? We get them from commercial breeders. We get them from hobby or home breeders. We get them from shelters, and we get them from foreign sources. And that's pretty much it. You know, it takes two dogs to make a puppy. So somewhere along that food chain, if you will, or that social chain, the ultimate solution is in terms of scales, Steve, where we need 1 million to 2 million dogs a year, I believe, to meet demand. And as demand grows, particularly post-COVID, it's going to have to be from one of two sources of scale, either commercial breeders or foreign sources. Foreign sources are from rough countries, usually. They're from countries that don't have serious animal welfare standards. And CDC said last year that they think about 1.1 million dogs came into the U.S., and only 2 to 3% had health records, had any kind of vaccination records. So I'm happy those dogs are finding a home. But as a public policy, as a public health issue, probably not a great long-term solution. And that takes you back to the world that you and I have looked at for 10 to 15 years, and maybe even longer in your case, and realized it seems to be intractable. You have powerful organizations and leading thinkers like yourself challenging the conditions of a lot of large-scale breeders. And HSUS came up with the marvelous epithet of puppy mills, and that's become synonymous in most people's minds with a large-scale breeder. And my challenge is this. Other industries have dealt with this issue, and it's solvable. It's actually a political solution, except the two sides, I'm not including you in this, but the two sides will not even get in the room together.
All right,
we're not that far from having.
I want to jump in there because what I have advocated for years, first of all, I agree with what you're saying. But what I have advocated so far, is why can't everyone in the room get together and find a solution? And the only time, to my knowledge, that has happened is people did get into a room, a bunch of old gray-haired guys, and not the animal advocates, not folks like the Puppy Mill Project, not folks like, whether you like them or not, they're part of this, the Humane Society of the United States, not the rescue organizations, but just the same old, same old. And unless you talk to the opposition, if you will, or the other side, you're never going to solve everything. So I agree if that happened, because we all want the same thing. We all want viable companion animals that are healthy or likely to be behaviorally and medically for people that want those animals. So I'm not going to drop this. We're going to talk about this more. Mark Cushing, I'll tell you, this read is important because what Mark writes about is reality. And friends, you know more than anyone else that you know. I don't want dogs or cats to be sold at pet stores, which is only a small part of the book. But there is going to be this shortage that Mark is talking about. It's real. We can define why that is so from the author of Pet Nation when we come back. Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Back with us, Mark Cushing, the author of Pet Nation, The Love Affair That Changed America. But what do we do now? Because what Mark leads up to in this book is that we're going to have a shortage. And you know what? If you go to an animal shelter, even in this city, Mark, 90% of what you see are dogs that they're mixed breed dogs, but you would look at them probably and say, that's a pit bull. The truth is they are mixed breed dogs. And for people that want those dogs with that look, that's great. but not everyone does. So then what happens? Well, there's rescue organizations, and certainly dogs come in. So that's Chicago. And the other thing that is happening and in America is that the situation is very different in Boston, Chicago, Los Angeles, New York than it is in Alabama, Arkansas, or Kentucky. And the big thing now is transport. So animals are being, you talked about animals coming in from other countries. Animals are coming in from other states, including a territory we call Puerto Rico. And they're coming in huge numbers to cities like Chicago, Los Angeles, etc. But your crystal ball says at some point that'll stop too. And then still, the demand will exceed the supply of dogs. And I think that's about where we left off.
Yeah, and I think there's a solution in front of us, Steve, and thought leaders like yourself could play an important role. And we have a precedent. But basically, the way it's positioned right now is you've got animal rights and animal welfare organizations on one side, commercial breeders on the other. Breeders are their own worst enemy because of one thing, which I talk strongly about in the book, namely, they need to be transparent. That's what zoos did 30 years ago. Zoos used to look like jails, concrete rooms with bars. They don't look like that anymore. And if they looked like that, they'd have been picketed and closed down. But they brought TV cameras and reporters, and they brought the world and school children back inside zoos. They changed the look, and they said to everybody, you can watch what we do here. Breeders hide behind tall hedgerows because they don't trust the other side, okay? And they don't want to let outsiders in for fear of their motives. I'm not taking their side. I'm not fighting them. But if they were transparent, we may not have this issue.
But
so what's the solution?
Mark,
the solution is...
Mark, hang on. Before the solution, they aren't transparent in great part, and I'm generalizing here, but for the most part, it's because they can't be, because the conditions are horrible. They are terrible places. And you know what? Ideally, here's what happens. If I want a Irish setter, and I go to an Irish setter breeder, I get asked all sorts of questions from that breeder to make sure that I'm the right guy for their valuable dog. Those are hobby breeders. I am still a fan of what they do. An animal shelter, a legitimate, responsible rescue, and they're all not, but most are, will ask me similarly questions to make sure that I am responsible. If I rent, for example, that I have a contract to show the pets are allowed, that kind of thing. However, pet stores don't do that. And what you're talking about, those facilities, which I would call a puppy mill, but even the large-scale commercial facilities, they don't directly sell to those pet stores. They sell to that guy over there, to that guy. They have brokers who are all secret.
Yeah.
And then eventually the pet store gets the animal, but there's no way for your average consumer to even track where they're from.
Well, I think here's what I'm saying. You could spend 10 shows laying out the particulars
yes.
of the problem.
Yes.
The solution is simple. You've got to get both sides in a room, and we're not that far from leaders of both sides seeing breeding standards the same way, believe it or not. But you need an honest broker to pull them together, and there's efforts underway, and hopefully, I'm hoping the book generates enough discussion that can be successful. To the breeders, I have to say, transparency is crucial, and you're going to have to upgrade to where you're willing to have people see the conditions, and things can change, and the coffee industry did it 20 years ago. Starbucks, Caribou, Pete's Coffee, the national chains, they faced, we forget this because it's all behind them now, but I remember when they faced serious criticism and a challenge to their long-term survival if they didn't address environmental and labor conditions in the countries where their beans came from. And they created the Fair Trade Association. They agreed on standards. It took them, a couple of years to negotiate it. Always does. And when's the last time you heard about one of those disputes? 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a path, and we probably should jump on some other things. But I'm going to be involved, I hope, in efforts to get folks to the table. And it'll cause change. It has to cause change. You've got to get people to be confident where dogs come from. And I also think, Steve, and you could help me here, we have 76 land-grant universities, public land-grant universities in this country, and they study the breeding of all sorts of animals.
Yes.
And why aren't dogs on their radar, except for Purdue? So land-grants can step up. They're trusted by people. They have connections throughout the state. we could have a much more robust and humane hobby breeding and home breeding effort in a lot of states than we have right now, and land grants could lead the way. And I spend a lot of time with schools, and I'm going to see if they might show some interest too. But I know you have other questions for me. Fire away.
No, that's fine, and I love that idea. That's a creative idea. Several years ago, I was booed off a stage. Well, not literally, but people did boo me. I mean, they stood up and applauded when I was finally done talking about what I was there to talk about. It was a keynote talk, and it was to a group of, it was called SAWA at the time, that animal shelter organization,
yeah.
Right? And I was up there, and I said, you know what? At some point in time, here's what I hope happens, at least in major cities. And I said, maybe 6 years ago, this was 10 years away, I said, maybe in a decade, you will be getting a dog that is a golden retriever mix of some sort, and for whatever reason, that dog is not neutered. And then you get a dog that is just a total mixed breed dog, whatever that is, and she is not spayed.
Right.
I suggested you just put them together, let dogs do what they do, assuming it works out. And then you sell the puppies. You begin training the puppies, you socialize the puppies, etc., as you uniquely can responsibly do. And that's when they said, what? That's not what children do.
Great idea, Steve.
Yeah.
Steve, that is a great idea. And you know what? One of the themes underlying your excellent suggestion, however the crowd viewed it, is that we have done a phenomenal job with our spay-neuter campaign. But maybe we've gone a little, I mean, we're spaying and neutering, you know, every dog we can get our hands on. And how do you think you don't end up in a shortage at some point if you've done that so systematically? So put the same energy that we put into spay-neuter into addressing the breeding issue and the sourcing issue, and I think we'll have some progress. But it'll take a while. Hopefully the book Pet Nation's part of the conversation.
And think of the people that are not spaying and neutering and what their dogs are like. And reproductive experts have expressed concern about that too. So the dogs that are being reproduced outside the breeding world are disconcerting. You know, I'm talking about the backyard breeders greatly. That's disconcerting to these experts as well. The book, so much to talk about. This book is an amazing read. The book is called Pet Nation, The Love Affair That Changed America. Mark Cushing is the author. I will tell you, or your money back, this book will make you think, and that's not a bad thing. Thank you very much, Mark.
My pleasure, Steve. Always great talk.
Once again, welcome back to Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. The name of the book that we spoke about is called Pet Nation, The Love Affair That Changed America. Mark Cushing is the author. I've known Mark for some time because truly, if I'm at a veterinary meeting, likely he's there as well doing his thing. He's very smart and he's very right about a lot of what he says. Now, some of the specifics, I may disagree with him. I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I absolutely do not. I want to do anything to abolish puppy mills in America. But I think that if there's another side, whatever that is, they greatly want to do that too, except the people that operate the puppy mills. And we need to find a way to do that. We've not been able to do that for decades and decades because still people make those purchases at pet stores. They're impulsive purchases and as well now online. So one of the arguments against people who say, no, let dogs and cats be sold to pet stores because otherwise more people are going to go online. Well, there's no evidence of that. And people are going online anyway. Beside, you do what you can do, right? So I'm not in the federal government. I have no power to control the internet. I wish I did, but I do not. We need the federal government to step up and do something about it. Exactly what they do and how they do it, I don't have a clue. But in the meantime, what I do know is if we can minimize or prevent the sales to pet stores, well, why not? Those animals are coming from places where you never want to see breeding happening. Because it is inhumane. And as Mark points out, our definition of what's right for dogs and cats has sure changed a lot, as it should have changed a lot over the course of many, many years. Here's a story about a penguin dealing with depression. As I make a hard right turn here, an endangered rockhopper penguin wasn't feeling so well and was found in Western Australia, where the little guy named Pierre washed up on a beach. So veterinarians and others dealt with this penguin. They treated the penguin for molting problems. Hate when that happens. And the penguin seemed depressed. Who knew penguins can get depressed? But this penguin just didn't seem right. But medically, he was doing so much better. So what's going on? So those who rescued him, what they did is they pulled out an iPad and they played a documentary on rockhopper penguins. The rockhopper penguin will mate by jumping over, you know, those documents. You've seen them, right? Well, the penguin perked up. By seeing other penguins, this penguin said, wow, I've got new life in me. And he gets engrossed when he binge watches other penguins, apparently. We'll talk to you next week with more news like that on Steve Dale's Pet World.